All right, hi everyone. For those of you watching on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page, welcome to another week of Stoppage Time Live from Fideau in Buckhead. And for those of you here at Fideau, thanks for being with us tonight. It's good to see you all again. Mike Conti, Jason Longshore, Jimmy Vance. This is a celebratory version of Stoppage Time Live. I don't know how we don't have drinks in front of us to toast right now, but we're toasting our first ever trip to the Eastern Conference Final. If you're watching us online and you want to join us down here at Fideau and Buckhead, we're going to be giving away a Greg Garza signed jersey at the end of tonight. And if you're here at Fideau, go ahead and put in your permission slips basically right now, and hopefully you'll have a good chance to win tonight. But we have a lot to get to over the next hour. Jay Riddle is here tonight from the Unrelegated podcast, the face of the Atlanta United supporter culture. He'll join us in a few minutes. And then El Treviso, Miguel from Siempre United, will join us a little later on in the program. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight, I think, kind of breaking down what's happened over the last couple days. A phenomenal result on Sunday to go through to the Eastern Conference Final. And we'll start to kind of peek ahead a little bit to Red Bulls. We still have the better part of 12 days to prepare for that. But first off, guys, I really think that's about as well as Atlanta United can play. What we saw from them Sunday night, that 3-1 win over New York City, 4-1 on aggregate. New York City scored one goal in 180 minutes, and it was kind of off a bad bounce. So the defending really stands out to me. But like we talked about on Sunday, if you have a match where Joseph's going to score twice and Miguel's going to score, you're almost impossible to beat.
It's the best Atlanta United can play in this format. We've seen, I think, Atlanta United have better games where you're blowing LAFC out and you're just on fire in an attacking sense. But with the stakes that were on the line on Sunday and in this whole series, 180 minutes where you concede four shots on goal, one goal, Maxi Morales has to play five different positions to try to find the ball because Eric Rometty just put him in his back pocket. It's a great performance, and I think it makes everyone feel a little bit better coming into an Eastern Conference Final against the Red Bulls, a team that's had Atlanta's number.
Yeah. The two, I guess, most high-stakes matches in club history, maybe not the biggest match, but the two most high-stakes matches, and Atlanta United passed with flying colors.
Yeah, I think it gives the supporters a boost in confidence going in, you know, from the last part of the season. We know we didn't show up in our biggest matches in the regular season. Then in the playoffs, we showed what we do in playoff scenario this year. Great. I mean, some of our best performances back to back and against a top quality NYCFC side. And the intensity and the concentration were there in both legs.
How about Miles Robinson? I mean, that really just stood out to me how poised he was, the moments where he found himself kind of one-on-one with Villa. He was up for that challenge, played responsibly, didn't make a mistake. You know, I think we were all kind of cringing a little bit when we found out that Jeff Lorenowitz would not be in the 18, but boy, Miles Robinson, with that very valuable seasoning he got with ATL UTD2, was fully up for the challenge.
Shows the value of Atlanta United, too. And, I mean, we've had Scott Donnelly on the show talking about Miles, Bello, Carlton, that development from guys who have contributed to the first team at different points this season. You come into this game, Miles went through the final week of the USL season where he faced off against the number three team in the league, the number four team in the league, teams who were playing for significant stakes in the postseason in USL, and Miles came out of that with flying colors. You can't replicate that in practice. You can't replicate that if you're on loan to another USL team. You can only replicate that when you're in-house. Tata Martino can watch it, then bring him over to first-team training and watch how things have progressed with him.
I think, Jimmy, we could have a real genuine debate on which of the three was the best goal on Sunday. I mean, Joseph obviously from the spot, but that Almiron goal would have made Kevin Kratz proud, obviously. And then that pitch by Rometty. Joseph kind of chesting it down, onside. The New York City player that kept him onside, desperately raising his hand, and Joseph buries it. I mean, really, two genuine golazos.
Yeah, Almiron's goal basically sealed it. It was basically over. I mean, they got the goal back, made us sweat for the first 15 minutes.
I'm going to disagree. Almiron's goal didn't seal it because they get the goal back before the end of the first half. The first part of the second half, if they get a goal early, it's a completely different situation. Yeah. That was what sealed it to me, was the defensive performance in the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half. That's when I had the butterflies. Once we got past that first part of it, kind of felt some calm coming back.
Yeah, first when we first started getting the counters back and started possessing the ball, because that first 15 minutes, like, we had no possession at all.
They changed their style. They went from a 4-2-3-1. They pulled one of their holding midfielders in Herrera, who just didn't have it. You know, we talked about Yanhel Herrera and his impact coming back to NYC. He hadn't played since, I think, April. Mm-hmm. And it showed, because he's played a lot of minutes in a short period of time. He had nothing in the tank on Sunday. When you pull him, you bring on Castellanos, they have another attacking player. It took Atlanta a little while to deal with that. But once they did, they put the game away.
Well, and don't you feel like once they weathered that 15-minute stretch where it became clear that all Castellanos was really going to do was flail around there and try to draw fouls.
Well, there was a little more to it.
Well, okay. To my untrained eye, that's what it looked
like.
Hey,
he kept Martinez onside on that goal, too.
He did. But you knew that Castellanos, I mean, he didn't have enough that really made you scared. And then you didn't even put Bergat in the 18, so you had really no other attacking options off the bat. I thought Domi Turan really mismanaged his 18 on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll get there in one sec. But it wasn't so much what Castellanos brought. It was just the way the shape changed. And it took Atlanta a minute, I think, to fully commit to a line of five and then a line of three that was very compact, very close together, and just made it impossible for NYC to break through. Go back and watch the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half. You see New York City get to the edge of the final third, look left, look right. There's nowhere to go because there's eight players there in a very tight space. Right. Once Atlanta committed to that, that was when it changed. And then you had Miguel and Joseph to lead the break.
But going back to Turan for a second, when we saw their 18, we thought, oh, boy. I mean, if they have to chase a couple goals in the second half, they're going to be in real trouble.
It was baffling because you look at it in the playoffs for me when I see the 18 come. I want to see the shape, want to see what ways the shape could change in game, and then I want to see who the key defensive subs are and who the key attacking subs are. Mm-hmm. Attacking subs was the first thing I'm looking for with NYC because they had to score goals here. It was Castellanos and nobody else. And Joe Inga Berget has been their main guy off the bench. He came off the bench at Yankee Stadium, not even in the 18, and we've heard the post-match audio. Domi Turan was very defensive when he was asked about that.
Profanely defensive.
Possibly.
Speaking of profane, you know who's one player that we continue to take for granted? Well, he's profane. We've heard him on our microphones. But we keep taking Brad Guzan for granted, I think. And he had his playoff shutout streak snapped at 400 minutes. And I know what you're all thinking. They actually count when he was with Chivas in 2007.
Chivas USA.
So, Chivas USA.
Show respect to the departed.
We'll pour one out for them.
Yes.
I don't know what it is about playing New York City, though. They always seem to bring out the best in Brad. And it's going to get forgotten because we had those pretty goals that we talked about. Brad made a couple really big saves in that 15, 20-minute stretch in the second half where New York City was really on the front foot.
Yeah, I think it was Gressel miskicked that, and then who volleyed that one? That right to Guzan? It was a good save.
It was more. He made a couple saves. The other main challenges. So you had four shots on goal in the series. One was a goal off the deflection. Two were right at Guzan. I think the other was a somewhat difficult save. Mm-hmm. What I was impressed with him, though, was the way he controlled the box.
Yep.
The way he controlled the 18. He was very quick to come off his line. He was good with his feet. Even when he wasn't called on to make a lot of saves in a series, like he was at Yankee Stadium this summer, he had an impact on the match.
Yeah, it's one of those matches where caught crosses can somewhat... sometimes that's a misleading stat. I think in this case that was actually a very vital stat. All right, some club news as we go into the week. First of all, the good news. Tata Martino today won MLS Coach of the Year, which is awesome for Tata Martino. And won it comfortably, really. Got about 50% of the club vote. The player vote got about 40% of the club vote. Bob Bradley of LAFC won the media vote, but Tata was second.
That's what's interesting, though. And we'll, one second on the rest. The media saw it one way.
Yeah.
Bradley won fairly comfortable in the media vote. Yeah. The players, 47%, almost half, voted for Tata. The clubs, the front offices, it was over 30%.
Yeah.
The difference between how the clubs and the players saw it and how the media saw it was really interesting to me.
We don't get a vote, by the way, just so you all know.
Did not vote.
No. And a shout out to the supporter groups for that amazing TIFO.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That was the TIFO of the year. Yeah. That was a great. And you saw Tata and how emotional he was. You loved that. So congratulations to Tata. I guess we're going to find out MVP. They really have not told us how they're kind of rolling these out day by day. So maybe we'll get MVP tomorrow. I don't know. I mean, I got
what else is left?
MVP and rookie? We've had
no. We have rookie Corey Baird.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. I think it's just
MVP. It might
MVP.
Just be MVP.
Zlatan got the goal of the year. That's all.
That was the right call.
Yeah,
I'm fine
it's
with
the
that.
Right call. No Atlanta United goals were nominated, which is amazing because Atlanta United had like six goals of the week this year.
Well, it was a fan vote, so
yeah. Well,
you're not going to do that.
No, right? Yeah, it'll.
Come on,
tilt it. So maybe we'll find out MVP. I still think it should be Joseph. I would have no problem if it were Almiron. You know, we've talked in the past about Rooney and Zlatan. My issue is they did not play the full year.
Vela would be my other one.
Vela would be in the and he is a finalist for it.
Yeah.
So we'll find out maybe tomorrow. Now, the international call-ups. This is something that I think is going to give us a lot of heartburn over the next 10 days. And we talked a little bit about this last week about how it means something to the players. I mean, you don't want to discount the honor of taking a call-up. But, boy, what bothers me is the travel. Because Brad Guzan just got to Belgium today, I think.
England. Yeah.
This morning. They're going to play England, then they're going to go to Belgium play Italy. The one that kills me is Paraguay having to play a fixture in South Africa next Tuesday. And Almiron and Tito were both called up. Tito is clearly not 100% healthy. We can speculate on Miguel. I don't think we really fully know where he is fitness-wise right now. Osorio calls them both up. They have to go to South Africa, play a match there Tuesday night, find a way to get back here Wednesday, maybe Thursday. Thank God you aren't playing Columbus on the road next week, and at least you have a home match, so you don't have to worry about that. But I hate that. Joseph's got to go to Japan. We don't know if he's going to have to play the second fixture against, who is it, Iran?
I'd be surprised if he did, considering he hasn't on the other two trips.
But the bottom line is you're taking our most vital players right now. You're putting them through this ringer of travel. New York Red Bulls, they're dealing with it too.
Yep.
In some ways even worse. Because Tyler Adams, Aaron Wong, Kamar Lawrence,
Kaku
Etienne for Haiti, I think, right? Royer is not up for Austria.
No.
Look for that. But they've got five guys going. It's not that they're playing. It's not that they're called up. It's the travel. That's what bothers me the most.
MLS has to change the playoff schedule. They have to avoid this window in the best way you can. The problem is the window's always going to exist. Last year, this is where World Cup qualifying playoffs were.
Right.
You're never going to be able to avoid that if you're a player. You're playing in that. If you're, right now, if you're Miguel, if you're Tito, you're being called up to play for a new manager that you have never played for. You can't turn it down because you have Copa America next summer.
Right.
And that's a huge prestigious honor for Paraguay. MLS, for me, you have to extend the regular season in its current format to where it ends this past weekend. Then you have the international break. That first weekend back where all the European leagues come back, you don't play that weekend. You get rid of the knockout round, and you play the first leg of the conference semis on the following Wednesday. It's a full week after the international break.
Could you also start this as an alternative to that? Could you start the season earlier? And if you're worried about CONCACAF, could you play a couple more midweek matches, maybe compress the season a little bit, and have the playoffs end right now? Like this past Sunday, have your MLS Cup final, and then go to the international.
For Atlanta, that'd be fine to play more midweek matches. Attendance would be just fine.
Right.
For some markets, that's going to be a huge problem.
That's fair.
And I don't know if the league as a whole, if that's the better way to do it.
But in 2022, you're going to have to do something like this.
Well,
the season has to be over before the World Cup.
Yes, that's true. And let's see what happens when we get closer to that.
Right.
I'm still not 100% convinced that's going down the way it's currently scheduled. There's so many different issues with it. Right now, you're trying to have teams based in Iran because there's just not enough room in Qatar, and that's a bit of a problem. Let's hold off on 2022 scheduling just yet.
Stay at the Tehran courtyard by Marriott. I'm sure that'll be great.
Yes, the Residence Inn. It'll be great.
Look, I mean, here's the bottom line. If everyone comes back healthy, we'll be fine. The thing is, the last international break we had, everyone didn't come back healthy. Tito came back hurt. We're still, I think, a little bit battle-scarred from what happened to Joseph last year. I really do not like the thought of Almiron, even at 80%, being pressed into a friendly in South Africa. Where are they playing, by the way?
South Africa.
They're playing South Africa. Yeah. Okay. For some reason, I thought they were playing someone else in South Africa. But I guess just kind of light a novena, a candle, something like that, and keep a good thought, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Jimmy's going to be back with us a little later on. Go ahead and send us your questions on Facebook. We'll get to them at the end of the show tonight, as always. Also, take your questions here at Fido after we sign off Facebook at 8 o'clock tonight. I do want to say we did mention at the end of last week's show we thought we would have an Atlanta United player. They really want the players right now focused on the playoffs, and we certainly understand and appreciate all that. We will hope to have some more Atlanta United guests this season. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out tonight. We want them focused on Red Bulls. We don't want to do anything that would pull them away from that. So hopefully you'll respect that. And I promise we still have a good show because Jay Riddle is going to come on right now. And,
it's a pretty good sub.
I mean, Jay kind of looks like Julian Gressel a little, and like kind of, right? Yeah, you're looking at the wrong camera, Jay.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that one. Look at that one. Yeah.
Do you know what Julian Gressel looks like?
I mean, you're kind of, right? I don't know. I mean,
Suck it in a bit.
Suck it in. Well, yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Jay Riddle of the Unrelegated Podcast. Jay Riddle, I think, also really one of the faces of Atlanta United supporter culture. And I really mean that sincerely. It's not because you were in the New York Times.
Everybody's sick of this dumb face already. Jesus.
Well, but, I mean, we talked about this back in June at the Podcastathon right after the New York Times article came out.
Right.
I mean, what was that like where you go to Publix, you pick up the New York Times, not the, you know, Dahlonega Times, the New York Times, and there you are in full color in front of the sports section.
I was angry. I paid him $10,000 to be on the very front. No, I'm just
kidding. That must have been surreal, though.
It was. We actually, I think my wife was more psyched about it, Jenny, than I was. She actually made us drive around downtown looking at all the different Publix and grocery stores. Mm-hmm. And Sunday morning, you must have a lot of hardcore New York Times readers and then also people. There may have been some college games going on or something or other coverage because somebody at one Publix or a Kroger, all the sports sections were taken out of all six papers that they had. So someone beat me to it. I don't know if I have a
Jay Riddle fan club who went and grabbed those.
Yeah. Yeah. It was Kelly Francis, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. She drove us to the airport. That's how we got our copy.
You had to go all the way to the airport.
Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, crazy.
Before we get into nothing's going to stop us and before we get into all the fan culture issues, I just want your general thoughts on what we saw Sunday. And Jason and I have been debating this a little. I think that's the two best consecutive matches this club has ever played. Jason's pointed to a couple other occasions. The Minnesota LAFC stretch would be one. There were a few last year. But I think considering the stakes, that's the best two-match stretch we've seen from this club. What do you think?
I think from an, you know, I think we were last year, it was all about the entertainment, goals, goals, goals. So, like, you know, a good performance to us was, you know, going out to LA Galaxy or beating New England 7, you know, nil and scoring all these goals. But I think what we've learned is when we got knocked out by Columbus in PKs is playing a holistic game and playing a playoff game is totally different. Mm-hmm. And what I liked is that we started playing playoff soccer. It's like Tata got the message. And I don't know if it was also, you know, getting resoundingly beat by a weakened New York Red Bulls team, being beat by Toronto, if those things had to happen to get us there. But from a holistic perspective, especially the last game, I saw us conceding possession again when we had 30% possession, but I also saw us press when we had the opportunity. And I also saw us got CONCACAF when we needed to. So to me, that's the types of teams that win playoffs. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I kind of grinded it out on Sunday. It wasn't the pretty soccer we saw at Mercedes-Benz last season in that run of home games. It was different.
Some pretty goals.
It's graded differently.
No doubt.
I mean, goals are at a premium. I think defensive play is amplified in the postseason, and you have to find a way through. I don't think it would have happened if you hadn't lost at Red Bull Arena and lost at Toronto. I don't think you would have had the team play this way.
Well, and also, I mean, we've talked at great length about the resiliency of this club. They haven't had back-to-back losses all year. They're 10-0-1
after... My favorite Mike Conti treasure chest, Matt.
They're 11-0-1 after a dropping of points now. Four straight clean sheets after a match in which they give up three or more goals. So, I mean, we know that this club is resilient. I think they've earned our trust a little bit.
Yeah.
The question now is... how much do you trust them against Red Bulls, seeing how they've played the last two matches compared to how they were playing? I don't want to say they were limping into that match at the end of September, but they weren't playing as well as they're playing now.
I'm actually the least worried about how they're playing, and I'll tell you why. Because we know how they play. They play the same way since Armas took over. I mean, he started to introduce a little more nuance into their style of play. They are able to hold on to a lead a little bit more than Marsh, right?
Just
maybe it's
little.
More emotional. He's inspiring them, I think, emotionally.
That's where I'm at.
But tactically, they've been the same all season. Yeah. And they can plug and play, and we know that they're dangerous regardless of whether they have all their key players. That's not important. What's important is what we're doing and what you just talked about. And what we're doing is we're building different strategies that we can rely on, and now our players have executed those and built confidence that they can do that on the fly during the game and adapt to different scenarios, especially over two legs. You give me two legs of Red Bulls right now, I say it's a 50-50 toss-up.
Yeah, easily. I would agree. We'll get into pretty heavy preview of the Red Bull series next week. Let's get into something else Atlanta's doing, and I think you've been a huge part of this, is creating a very unique soccer culture in the city. I don't think there's another city in Atlanta or in the country that has this. And I think, you know, I keep coming back to it being inclusive, it truly representing the name United. You know, when you started getting involved in it, you know, were you thinking about those types of things, or did it just kind of happen organically for you?
I think it was pretty organic. I think, you know, I have a natural tendency to jump in with both feet when I like something, and have and sometimes those things burn out quick, you know, in terms of passions, and sometimes things gel on occasion. For me, the only reason I think I've stayed fueled this long and things have allowed to grow organically is the people. Are the people that encourage me, the people that I meet, that are friends at the tailgate, that inspire that sort of motivation to keep going and, you know, keep that energy going, even when sometimes I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just me. Like, you know, a lot of that energy, I rely on everybody else to help give me that as well. So it's been a crazy journey the last couple of years. I never expected to be doing a podcast. I've never, especially with a co-host that I've never met until recently. So, yeah, all these things are just still blows my mind.
I've always wondered how you do it. You have a day job.
Yes.
Okay, and
yes.
I see you tweeting at 2:30 in the morning.
I'm not independently wealthy.
No, but I see you tweeting at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
The music videos are not something that you can just kind of pop out there.
Maybe for someone that actually has a decade of video editing experience,
no,
but not for me, no.
I mean, a 13-minute Julian Gressel hype video is going to take more than 13 minutes to
Yeah,
produce.
I might have gotten a little carried away with Gressel.
No, I loved it. but how have you balanced your time where, I mean, you said you have a wife, you have a day job, and you've got Atlanta United.
Right.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't do anything else. I don't do anything else. The time that I have my wife, I take very seriously. We have certain routines. You know, we go to a park every weekend, and we go and walk the dog, and we go and just decompress. And, you know, there are certain things that are just part of routine. So it's not like the quantity of the time. It's the quality for us. And I also grew up as a consultant traveling for up until 4 years ago. For a decade, I traveled every week.
Right.
So, and my wife, I've been with her since almost day one of my consulting career, so I was gone all the time. So comparatively, me doing stuff and sitting in the other room and editing videos is far better than me being in a hotel room somewhere. So I think that's also part of it is expectations as well. And so, that, you know, and it's different for everybody, right? Sure. What I do wouldn't work for some people. But there's other people, while I'm doing videos and stuff, there are people that are out at a warehouse doing TIFO till 2 in the morning every night. And they're there doing it all the time, and you see the same people over and over again. And they're doing load-ins and load-outs, like this guy over here, Domer, and other folks. So I may be more visible, but there's a lot going on behind me, you know.
But all of that is part of creating what Atlanta soccer is. And there's been some back and forth about different cities and different things. Something I've noticed that you do a lot of that I don't know of other supporters groups in other cities that do it, you're always out front welcoming other supporters from other cities to Atlanta and making sure they get a true representation of what soccer is like in Atlanta. You know, how much responsibility do you take in doing that and representing it?
You know, I'm lucky to have done a lot of public speaking as part of my career and grown and learned from a lot of people in that respect in different communities. And one of the things that taught me is to speak with your own voice, number one. Also, being a graduate of the Ridgeview Institute Rehabilitation Program for drug addiction and alcohol abuse 5 years ago, you learn from therapists how to use I statements. So believe it or not, those tools I use today, so when I do talk to people from the newspaper or I meet other people and they ask about things that we do, I tell them the things I do know. There's a lot of things I don't know. And it's a lot of just almost like a liaison, I feel like. It's there's so much knowledge I don't have around things like TIFO and the things that go on the back office and between the supporters groups. My supporter group's faction keeps me very insulated from that stuff. they take care of a lot of those things behind the scenes. And that allows me to use my leverage of this sort of social media persona that's been created as a gateway, because a lot of times what it is I'm just an intermediary. Some people that are with supporters groups already with other cities may know to reach out to Terminus Legion or Footy Mob and hit the email button and say, hey, where do we go? A lot of people are not in supporters groups, and especially as Atlanta United grows, you see a lot of new fans that don't know anything about supporters group culture. They wouldn't know where to look. All they see is this guy with a lot of hashtag Atlanta United, so they ping me and say, where do I go? What time does this start? You know, when does the gate open at the stadium? I get questions that, you know, you would normally submit to, like, maybe the website for Mercedes-Benz, and I get DMs all the time. So I take it very seriously. I try to respond to all of them. I get worried if I don't respond or I find a DM that I missed like a day later. It really bothers me, and maybe that's just working in a customer service-oriented industry. But either way, I do take it very seriously.
Well, I think you're an enormously important ambassador for the club, even though you don't work for the club. And, you know, Jason brought up a very good point about how you've built bridges to opposing supporters groups. You mentioned something that bothers you. I'm going to tell you about something that really bothers me. When I see antagonistic statements from outside Atlanta assailing the soccer culture that we have here, inferring that it might be plastic or corporate or, you know, whatever stupid adjective you want to use, I take that personally, and I'm not as invested in it as you are.
You know I do.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel when you see that?
It depends. It depends who's saying it a lot of times. I mean, with one of the things I learned over the course of last season as I was on Twitter more than, you know, typical. Before Atlanta United, I was on Twitter largely for industry-related things that I did. And I basically turned that off and hit that switch off, and it became all full. I decided to go all Atlanta United. And one of the things I've learned is, you know, you pick your battles, right? If it's some guy that I don't know or an anonymous account, you ignore it. But if there's a guy with a check mark next to his name with 5,000, 10,000 followers who writes books on soccer and he's an influencer in the community and he or she is saying those things, then I feel obligated to stand up. And I think that there is a pre-existing culture in MLS, and this is with anything that's going through change, where there are people that have done things a certain way and they talk about things a certain way and they may use a more cynical tone, or and that may have people may have gotten away with that before because it was a smaller community and people may have known them, or maybe they knew they were joking, or maybe it was just they didn't care because they didn't care about casual fans or new fans or growing the sport. But we're at a place now where it's not just about attacking Atlanta United. To me, it's like you're turning off people from the sport in general. So I'm going to challenge you on it. Now, if you want to get personal and stuff, that's your prerogative, and I'm not going to get personal back in terms of name-calling and stuff. But I will call you out and say, I think you're being a bit of a jerk, you know, or I think you're being pretentious. Because it is pretentious to sit there and point at a banner in our supporter section and say, well, why are you incorporating a company into the name of the banner? And it's like, well, first of all, it's not your supporter section, so why do you care? And why do you need to take so much time out of your day to point that out? And then if I disagree with you, why are you getting so upset that I disagree with you? You know, I just think that there are things that people that are influencers in the soccer community need to take a step back and look at how they use language and the way they do things. And maybe they're not trying to be personal, and maybe they're just think they're making a funny joke. Because to him, it's just a banner. But to us, we made that. That was part of how we built our supporter section. That is part of the story of our culture. And just because you don't relate how we relate to Arthur Blank and the way we incorporate a name of a company into something, tongue-in-cheek, just because you don't relate or understand it doesn't mean that it's not something of value to us. And so you don't need to ridicule it. So I'm going to call you out on it.
What I love is that Atlanta soccer is not a culture about you should do it like us. It's a culture, and I think you're a huge part of it, as all the supporters are. It's a culture of saying, this is how we do this. This is how Atlanta does this,
yeah,
not
you
that
do
we're
you,
better than you.
And we'll do us.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is also, I mean, to Atlanta United fans and people watching, don't get caught into that trap. You know, it's one thing when you have a game that day and it's banter.
Sure, sure.
But if you're sitting outside, the game's done, and you weren't even a supporter of one of the teams involved in the game, and you're just going out of your way to attack something. Oh, well, why do they use that dumb song? Or why do they do that song after? Why do they... Well,
because it's Atlanta, and yeah, Atlanta has its own
because
thing.
It's their own culture. Just because you don't understand it doesn't mean you shouldn't respect it.
Right.
On that point, Atlanta United's become a very big thing in our city. Can it get bigger?
Oh, scary big. I think so. I think we saw that.
Because it feels scary big already.
I think we saw that with the playoff game on Sunday. It's expensive. Like, that's the thing you got to think about. I mean, Atlanta United tickets are not the most expensive, but they're probably in the upper half of ticket prices in the league. And when you start, you know, you may even if you're a season ticket holder, you've already done your payment plan or whatever from that year. Well, now you're paying more money for each ticket. We saw that now with the MLS Cup hitting people, and people were like, "Wow, man, this is really hitting my wallet." But what
by the way,
I am
Atlanta
seeing,
United has nothing to do with that.
But no, but what I am seeing is that people are hitting the buy button and then complaining.
They're not, right. Right. No, that's a great point.
There
right.
are people just saying, "I'm not going to go see this product. It's not worth it. I don't, you know, why should I go see this?" People want to see this, and they're willing to pay for it. And I mean, that means we could have other arguments or discussions about whether you should have to pay more for it or things like that or the prices. But at the end of the day, you know, 70,000 people are paying a lot of money to come out and see this team.
And the thing is, it's not even just the 70,000 that were there on Sunday. It's the thousands and thousands who are watching at home or at a bar or outside of Atlanta in the region or buy the jersey or buy a hat or buy a scarf. And that's where I think the difference between Atlanta and other cities is. Atlanta United is not, the fan base is not just who shows up in the stadium. And I think in other MLS markets, that's it. Here, it's like any other team. Every Falcons fan does not show up to Mercedes-Benz for a game day. They're watching, they're getting together with friends, they're watching in Macon, they're watching wherever. That's what Atlanta United is. It is kind of an Atlanta United nation as opposed to just...
Atlanta United Nation. Well, that's a good point because we were just at a watch party with a group called Atlanta United Nation.
Was that the one in Suwannee?
It was Venezuelans, Colombians, Bosnians, Mexicans.
Yeah.
Everybody was there watching the game. But, up in Gwinnett, in Suwannee.
Well, but do you think that might be the next frontier now in growing the supporter culture where... I mean, I think to some extent, Atlanta United is a regional phenomenon already.
Yeah,
But can it get even bigger in, say, Greenville, Spartanburg, in Chattanooga, in Macon, in Augusta, in Savannah, Birmingham, Alabama? I mean, can this really kind of spread and become a true regional powerhouse?
Well, I think we're already seeing it. Atlanta United 2 is spreading the product. It's the same five stripes. It's the same brand. And they're going and playing in Richmond, and they're playing Charleston, and they're being, you know, they're regularly being seen by lower league soccer fans. And that's, if they weren't already following Atlanta United, it piques interest, right? I mean, they might not have an MLS team near them. Nashville's not started yet. Cincinnati is a ways away from us. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to continue to grow in that aspect. We just had I had a guy come down for his very first Atlanta United match. You met him. You've been on his podcast, yeah. Lower League, Del Schaffer. And he came down for his first match for this playoff game. He's a Charleston Battery guy. He's in one of the supporters group for Charleston Battery. But he's willing to pay money and fly down for a playoff game. You know, that's pretty incredible. And then just the sheer amount of support we saw outside the perimeter. We've been to Cumming, Georgia. Mm-hmm. We've had invites from Greenville. Watch parties that's in Greenville awesome. Have asked Unrelegated to come out and record at their watch parties. So it's already happening.
Yeah.
Already that's happening.
Awesome. We have short time remaining. I have to ask you before we're done. Nothing's going to stop us now. And you and I have talked about how meaningful that is to me for reasons we can get into later. It's not because I'm a big fan of Mannequin, by the way.
You're a huge Starship fan.
Yeah, busted. How do you come up with it?
You may recall a magical moment in the San Jose game where we came back.
Oh, I remember.
And I remember.
And one of the digital media team's members recorded a silent video because the audio could not be shared.
Right.
Yeah, the audio definitely could not be shared.
Right.
And maybe an hour after the match it posted, he was probably on the van ride back to the hotel or something and posted it up. And I tweeted out and I said, this needs a soundtrack. What should it be? But I was impatient. So 5 minutes later, I just picked the first song that went in my head and I put it on there. And that was Nothing's Gonna Stop Us, which I have to say, I don't think I listened to that song for 5-10 years. I don't know why it popped in my head.
Well,
because, you know, it's not in my playlist or anything like that. I had to go pay for it and download it. Stick it on there.
As
so.
Far as Jason and I are concerned, it is the unofficial playoff theme song for Atlanta.
And I thank
United.
You guys for playing it.
Because
it spread, and they played it in the club section last night as Miguel Almiron took off his shirt and went down the walkway back to his locker room
I don't know.
Delta Sky 360 Lounge. So
I'm sure the ladies love that. I don't know how the season's going to end, but if it should end on December the 8th, I think we'll have something very special associated with that, so I can promise you that.
Absolutely. So. Thank you guys for having us on.
Thank you for coming. Really appreciate it.
You can check us out at Unrelegated Podcast iTunes. We just recorded a great episode last night with Archie Eversole.
Yeah, okay.
And also great. With Poet from Filthy Fellas and also an influencer with Copa 90. And there's going to be some stuff coming out, a video of them with Copa 90 coming out in a week or so about Atlanta United. So you can go and check that out and download it and listen to it. And we had Dawit Selassie on, who is a really interesting guy. He's a coach for Inner Atlanta Blues and soccer in the streets. He grew up in Georgia and as an African-American guy, told a little bit about his story playing as a young African-American and how it's changed now up until like him coaching the U9 kids on the West End pitch at Soccer in the Street. So very cool stuff. Check it out.
Jay, thanks.
Thanks.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming. Jay Riddle, everyone. Thank you for coming, Jay. As he does his reach across handshake.
Yeah,
I'm a big guy to reach across. Thank you, Jay, very much. You know, back in June, I think it was after the Philly Union match, we did a podcast-a-thon, and Jay was a big part of it up at the Atlanta United training facility. He's part of a fundraiser for Soccer in the Streets. And I got a chance to meet El Trevisio from Siempre United that day. And I have to tell you, I don't understand a word of Spanish, but I do understand how important Siempre United and their podcast has been to connect with a very, very large group of Latin-speaking fans. And El Trevisio, Miguel, is here tonight. And, man, I am honored to have you here. It's so good to see
you. Thank you, guys, for having me.
Thank you for coming. I told you back in June, whoever does your graphics, your memes, deserves a raise. Yeah. It's awesome. I always get a kick out of it.
Yeah, well, we try.
You do a great job. What were your thoughts about the match on Sunday? It felt like it would have been hard to imagine Atlanta United playing much better than they did.
The last two games have been out of this world. So now I do have to apologize about my voice. I just get in the back.
That's okay.
From Sunday.
Still from Sunday,
screaming.
That means you used it well. You used it well.
It was amazing. I mean, I'm usually very optimistic about the scores and and the predictions on our podcast, we always say, okay, you know, your prediction. Then we all go around, and then like 1-0, 2-0, 2-1. And I'm like, no, 3-0. I didn't even call it. Two Joseph goals and one Miggy's. I'm like, so there you go.
Didn't Waka Flocka also put 3 goals out on our Facebook Live?
He did.
There was a lot of optimism on Sunday. And
well, the way we're playing, I mean, I think there was a master plan behind losing the supporters' shield.
You're on the black helicopter theory, too.
Tata was like, okay, we're going to play like this, and they're going to think like we're not that good, and then we're going back on the playoffs and destroy everybody. Well,
it's a bold strategy, Con. We'll see if that pays out in a couple weeks.
He's not the only one with that one. I've heard that multiple times.
No. Seeing how they played the last 2 weeks, that does lend some credence to that theory. When Tata Martino was hired as manager of this club, what was your reaction to that? Because to me, as someone who was a complete outsider, I'm thinking, wow, they hired someone who managed Barca and Argentina. This club's going to have instant credibility.
Yeah, well, when I found out, I fell on my knees. I was like, thank you, God. I've been a soccer player, a soccer coach. I follow, for me, there's only soccer, and that's it. And I apologize, you know, to all the other supporters for other sports, but for me, it's just soccer.
Yeah.
I watch soccer. I was not involved in the MLS until Atlanta came in the map. Mm-hmm. Now I watch all the MLS matches. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I follow every single team in our conference, in the Western mm-hmm. Conference. You know, I'm just so involved, and I love it. I've been missing out, and when I found out Tata came on board, I couldn't believe it. It was a dream come true, because that connection with a coach with that magnitude, that he coached Messi, man. I mean,
right.
He coached Barcelona. So the guy was so up there, and for him to you know, accept the position as a manager of Atlanta, I felt so privileged. I felt so happy, and I felt like we could, you know, reach and touch the sky with this guy.
So as somebody who watches Major League Soccer now and doesn't have maybe the background from watching it 10 years ago when it wasn't as good of a product, but watching it now, how do you feel like it compares to other leagues in this hemisphere, like Mexico, Argentina, Brazil?
I believe we were a tad behind probably, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right now it's highly competitive. I believe what Atlanta did and switched the mentality of MLS. What Atlanta built from the ground and start bringing new players, newcomer mm-hmm. players, that was a fresh start for everybody. Now look Biggie's case, Joseph's case. Mm-hmm. This is like a they're gonna be pushed back into Europe like stars.
Right.
Like they're just here, show what they got, and somebody's gonna take a look and say, okay, I want that kid from MLS. You see this guy from went to Bayern. I don't remember his name.
Alfonso Davies.
Yes,
yeah.
Him. You know, it's just this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
By the World Cup, I can bet money that this league will be a pair with La Liga or like the top mm-hmm. leagues in the world.
By the way, we should all congratulate Alfonso Davies today in the award show that they did on MLSsoccer.com. Alfonso Davies, I'm sure this is a very close vote, was named Canadian MLS Player of the Year by Andrew Wiebe and Bobby Warshaw. So really going out on a big limb there.
That's a tough call.
Well, Osorio's Canadian, right?
Yes.
So, okay, well, great.
Yeah, that's
you're,
it.
You're better than Jonathan Osorio, I guess. I don't know. You're wearing a Ladose shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And we got a chance. At my first experience with Ladose was out at West End Marta a couple weeks ago.
Right. I know. I couldn't go, but I missed that one.
Ladose, I think, is a really important representation of the Latin supporters culture in Atlanta. And I think for the English speakers here in the room, a lot of us don't know just how broad and how big that is. I'm wondering if you can describe, you know, Metro Atlanta's got a very, very big Latin community.
Yes, sir.
Have they all bought into Atlanta United?
Well, we try to open, I mean, we're not we're the bad boys of the supporters group because we're not official. We're not official, but
renegades.
But, yeah, but
and I'm not talking about Ladosi specifically. Yeah. I'm just talking about in general.
I know, but that you see, the Ladosi is the supporters group that brought the party to the supporter group section. Yeah. That brought the flavor. Mm. That brought the salsa. That brought the little all the drums. La fiesta. Oh, there he is. So yeah, dude. I mean, we try to embrace the MLS culture. We didn't tailgate before.
Right.
That's something new for us.
And you guys are tailgating out there when I'm leaving at like four hours after the game. You're still out there tailgating.
Our tailgates go pre-tailgate, after the game. It's like 2 more hours.
We just
wait for the traffic to leave the stadium.
That's one way to put it.
But, I mean, it's just an excuse to party hard and to like, you know, show people what we're really about. We like to embrace all these different cultures because Spanish-speaking people is just so many and so broad that you got Central America, you got South America. So all that mixture, it makes what La Doce is. And you put all that together into a little blender, and that's why we start, you know, like with a little chant here, with a little song there. Mm-hmm. And that's after a while, we start rehearsing with the supporter teams. We're supporter groups, Resurgence, Faction, Footy Mob. We're all together. Once we're on the Gulch, it's just a family. That's how it feels. It feels like family. Everybody embraces each other. We see like, oh man, 2 weeks. It's been a while, bro. You know.
So let me ask you this. Like, I've known a lot of the guys from La Doce from coaching and being involved in like League of Lawrenceville or Georgia Soccer League and with soccer in the streets. And it's always felt like two very separate universes with the Latin soccer culture in Atlanta and the English-speaking soccer culture in Atlanta. I feel like what you guys do is you're kind of that bridge between the two. And how has that been for you? Like, how has it always been warmly received? Has it been weird on either side? Like, how has that worked, kind of blending everything into a uniquely Atlanta soccer culture?
Well, I'm saying us and La Doce because I'm very, very involved with these guys. And this is something that we were waiting for a long time. I mean, Arthur Blank hit the spot with Atlanta United. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we were brought up with soccer in our countries.
Right.
You know, I'm from Ecuador. And I remember my dad carrying me on his shoulders going to the game every Sunday. And that's where most of these guys come from. You know, Uruguay, Argentina, Mexico, Central America, Honduras, El Salvador. You know, you name it. I mean, everybody. It's just like down there, third world countries just have soccer. We're not that rich in sports. So what we have is that's the unique sport that we can worship, if you can say, and go every Sunday to see, you know, somebody kicking the ball. And when we came here, everything is different. Everything changed, and we had to adapt, like you said. Mm-hmm. But now, with this team, we have the excuse to embrace this MLS called like English culture, basically. And add that little stuff that we can put on the table for them.
That's perfect.
And that combination is what we have right now that I believe is working out.
Isn't that kind of a reflection of the team itself?
Absolutely.
A little bit, where you have some great Latin players, you have some great American players.
Yes.
You have some great German players. Mm-hmm. But I think it all kind of comes together on the pitch as a team that plays with a Latin style. And I'll tell you, just from Jason and I's perspective, the way that I try to call the game on the radio is in the Latin style. Mm-hmm. I could be Martin Tyler and try to put people to sleep. I don't want to be. I want to be the guy who screams like, you know, Jose Perez Navarro or Jesus Bracamontes or Andres Cantor or whatever. But I think what you've described is really kind of reflected on the field where it works. They play, I think, kind of a emotional Latin style of game, but it works with all the different pieces.
I think it gives the players a little push. They notice. They notice that they have all that people behind them, mm-hmm. and there's a city that just rally just to watch them, man. I mean, everything stops. You can see every day, more flags, more stickers in cars. You know, you go through any street of Atlanta, and I bet you can see an Atlanta United sticker or a flag.
Yeah.
So we're growing. And what you just said earlier, that how big can we grow? I mean, once we start playing the CONCACAF champions, you're going to see. I promise you, we're going to set a statement. We're going to set a statement, and I'm always so hopeful and so cheerful, but that's me, man. I love my team, and I'm so proud to call it mine. You know, it's just like, my God.
Let me ask you, podcasts are a big thing in the American soccer culture
because
you haven't had, like, radio. You don't have, you know, ESPN Deportes, Jorge Ramos, Isubanda. You don't have that, so people make it themselves. Spanish language, I don't think podcasts are as big of a deal, right?
No, that's something new, even for us.
So what pushed you guys to do it? And now you're doing, like, live streaming and growing and growing.
We're trying. We're like I said, it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Our podcast is called Siempre United, Always United, basically. And it just started with a couple of guys in a room talking about soccer. And for that, another guy came on board, and then I was the last addition to the team. And we do it because we love it. We love, you know, our team. We love, you know, to give that little information to people that doesn't have that reach or doesn't know about the game or doesn't have the whole understanding of MLS and all that. And now people, you know, it's funny that you go to the street, hey, Travieso. Hey, can you say hi to me on the podcast? Sure, I will. it's funny. It's cool. Now, I had the opportunity to visit the training ground last week.
I saw that.
Saw that, yeah.
Thank you. And I spoke to the players, and they watched our podcast. I was like, yeah. I couldn't believe it. Like, Miguel Almiron said, like, oh, yeah, I watch you guys. I was like, tear.
Well, I hope you've said just nice things about them.
Oh, right? Yeah. We apologize to Joseph about one
Uh-oh.
Time. We like, but no, he held a grudge for like 2 months. And then
did you take El Negativo? Did he go to the training ground?
Oh, no, we don't take him.
Okay, good. Yeah, just wanted to make sure.
I think we brought his shirt because it rained the whole day. So something must have been, you know, going on behind cameras. But it was el chofer, the driver, yeah. The guy who was behind cameras, and myself. And it was great. It was just the experience to watch him practice, mm-hmm. how Tata runs the practices, mm-hmm. in Spanglish and Spanish and English. And you see, he can speak English.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, that was amazing. I'm like, you know, but anyways, that's something for another day. But he was there. He's such a nice guy, and I was just hugging him and begging him not to go. He's like, all right, kid, let's go. But he's amazing. He just thought his cycle here is done, so he's gonna move on after bringing us that MLS Cup, hopefully.
Hey, I'm good with that. We'll build him a statue if he gets us a cup. Right?
yes, we
Miguel,
should.
Great job.
Oh, guys, thank you for having
you.
Me.
Thank you so much.
Gracias, Miguel.
Yeah. Right, Siempre United, the
Siempre
podcast.
United podcast.
It is absolutely outstanding. Thank you, Miguel, for joining us. If you're here with us at Fidel, one last call. Still taking some entries for that signed Greg Garza jersey, which we're going to raffle off. I was going to say auction off. We aren't taking bids. Raffle off in just a little bit. Jimmy Vance is back with us, and thank you for all the questions on Facebook. Let's get to those.
Let's see. Rachel Affleck has a little statement here. I was wondering to get your thoughts on. She said she didn't. Well, now it goes away, but the basic gist was she doesn't like Gressel being in the inside. She prefers him outside at the right wing back.
I'm part of that club, too. However, Escobar has been so good as the right wing back, and he's a better defender than Gressel, and right now it's defense first. So you're able to get to make it work, but I think Julian is not quite as comfortable playing centrally. You don't get as much of his field vision that way. He's better off and has a bigger impact on the match out wide, but Franco has been so big to this team right now. I think you have to do it this way for the good of the team.
And there is no way you're in anything other than a 3-5-2 against Red Bulls.
No. And the other side of it, too, is you have to play Miguel as the second forward right now. And it's something that I noticed Tata Martino was doing against New York City, regardless of the injury situation. He did it in the match back in here in April. He did it in the match at Yankee Stadium, and he did it in both of these. when you have Miguel in that role against NYC and you're looking to break their pressure, he's more free if he's in that second forward role. He can kind of pick his spots and go wherever. He's not tied down to having to defend. I wouldn't be surprised to see that again, because we saw how they closed it out against NYC with Remedy, Nagby, Gressel, and then Kratz coming in. Mm-hmm. I think that works defensively. Miguel in a free roll next to Joseph works really well.
Let's see. Michael Earhart asks, with Michael Miles Robinson's performance on Sunday, can we expect to see him again against the Red Bulls?
It's possible.
I mean, you know you can push that button if you have to. Now, if Larenowitz were 100% fit, I'd probably lean towards him just because of the little more veteran presence he gives you. But I think now you feel comfortable with Robinson if you have to.
Yeah, and if you have Jeff coming off the bench, it gives you a different look. So if you start with the same group that started on Sunday, then you have Jeff in reserve where we used Kratz. You might want to use Jeff there to close the game out
right, and
put it away. And he comes on for Gressel in the 80th minute with a lead. That type of situation opens up.
Christopher has a request here. I have to say this verbatim to you guys.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Is this Christopher Gersel?
Yes.
Christopher, are we on this camera? I really appreciate you helping me out with all the people on Twitter during the match on Sunday when I tweeted at halftime that extra time was no longer possible. I promise I wasn't making that up. I can't believe how many people were challenging me on that, but I appreciate you for helping.
He said there's one major piece still missing from Atlanta United Football Club, one last component that we need to complete this organization to ensure that all of Atlanta is represented. Say it with me, hashtag NWSL2ATL.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's just a bit of an infrastructure thing. I mean, honestly, if you're going to add an NWSL team to Atlanta United right now, you have to build another building at the training ground because the locker rooms are full. Everything is full. That place is bursting at the seams. They've added additional academy teams inside of the academy. They added one that plays in the Atlanta District Amateur Soccer League that was not planned on originally. So the building is full. There is land. There are opportunities to do it. But it takes time. You have to clear land. You have to build. You also have to build more staff.
Right.
Staffing this year was definitely stretched with ATL UTD2 coming online. And build an academy. So I think knowing Arthur Blank's foundation and knowing his commitment to getting girls active, it makes perfect sense. But I think it might be a year or two away.
And his commitment to soccer and developing soccer in Metro Atlanta, it's a vital part of it. There might also be a way where you can incorporate Kennesaw State University or one of the other institutions, maybe work with them on a facility or something like that.
I think from a training perspective, you wouldn't want to. I think you want it all. You want everybody close because then it's part of the club. And
true.
I think that's where Portland has been really successful in NWSL. That's why Utah had a great first year. That's why some others where it feels more separate. Orlando feels more separate. And they're not drawing very well for NWSL. No. Houston has had that.
They're not drawing very well. Either.
They were before they lost like 15 in a row.
That is true.
I missed the question from who it was, but they're asking about, do you know if Atlanta United is popular in South America?
Yeah, I think Atlanta United's probably the American club that's known best in South America because of Miguel, because of Joseph, because of Barco, because of the Argentines. Yeah. I think those games are getting picked up. Now it's to a point where you start to see the transfer rumors going into 2017 year one. It was, oh, no, that can't be true. Atlanta United doesn't exist. Or then it's, oh, well, connect everybody to Atlanta United because they have mucha plata. They have lots of money. Last year it was, oh, well, how could Barco go to MLS? Now you're seeing some of the names linked, and it's like, oh, well, okay. Yeah, it's Atlanta United.
Yeah, and when Joseph scored goal number 28, that was front page news in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
So it might not have necessarily been an Atlanta United thing, but MLS was a very big deal that weekend in Venezuela.
Yeah, with, I guess, Pity Martinez being linked with us again, it's just raising more eyebrows from, the Argentina Super League about some of the best players in that league coming to MLS and coming to Atlanta United.
The Argentine Super League is a very good league. It's not demonstrably better than Major League Soccer at this point. And I think people have a really weird perception of MLS sometimes, even in the U.S., based off what it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and they don't realize that it is at the same level as the rest of this hemisphere. Now, clubs have to prove it in CONCACAF Champions League, and if Copa Libertadores happens, you're going to take some lumps early because the experience level is not there, dealing with that pressure is not there. Overall quality, it's very comparable.
And let's see, Brandon's continually just showing off that he's
somewhere.
On the beach.
Yeah, where are you,
this guy?
Brandon, like in Fiji or something like that? I mean, he's not on the Jersey Shore. That's
no.
Scoping out the CCL.
Scouting in the Dominican Republic.
We appreciate that, Brandon. Thank you. Check out some of the stadiums for us. Thank you all for the questions. Appreciate it. We're going to stick around here at Fidel, obviously, as we always do. We'll be back here next week, 7 o'clock. We will have an announcement on guests on Jimmy's Twitter, at ATLSoccer929. Thank you all for coming again tonight. Stay with us here at Fidel. Good night to you on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page.